39. It's a moment that when Jesus dies on the cross. The moment he had died, we have this verse. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this was the Son of God." We've been following Mary all through this Christmas, but our journey now with her is nearing an end as we come to the end of Christmas. There are 12 days of Christmas, but today is day 11. So in the song, you remember, on the 11th day of Christmas, our true love gave to me... Yes, do you have a clue? Oh, yeah. You're so smart.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, that means tomorrow is the last day of Christmas. And Tuesday is a Christian holiday called Epiphany. It's the Christmas Epiphany duo, by the way, that originally makes up what's called the holidays. Christmas Epiphany. It's only recently that other non-Christian holidays have been included. Well, Epiphany is a celebration marking when the wise men came to Jesus. Now, normally in our Christmas pageants and our Christmas stories, we have the wise men coming along with the shepherds, right? Near the manger. You can kneel down all together around the manger. But actually, it's a separate event. And the way the story is even written, it seems that the wise men didn't get to Jerusalem until long after Christmas was over. Church, at the very beginning, has separated these two holidays, giving each of them their own day, 12 days apart. And in historically, as far as the holidays go, Epiphany came first. Epiphany was celebrated for many, many, many centuries, long before the newcomer celebration of Christmas was actually celebrated. It wasn't until the Middle Ages that Christmas was started to be celebrated. And still, I think in this cult, in our world today, in America, Christmas is the dominant holiday. But there are still many places in the world where Epiphany is the bigger holiday, the more important holiday. In Spain, for example, Three Kings Day is the major celebration. Children write letters to the three kings. They have names: Melchior, Caspar, and Belshazzar, asking for the presents they want these kings to bring to them. They mail off these letters in the post offices. And the children, however, then have to be good, because the three kings only bring presents if the kids are nice. If they're naughty, the kings bring a lump of coal. Ain't it sounding familiar? Well, on the 12th day of Christmas, the night before Epiphany, they lay out water and bread on the windowsills, and the three kings open the windows at night, take the water and the bread to go feed their camels. And as the camels are eating, they come in through the windows and put the presents there for the boys and girls who are sleeping. I just can't help but wonder where all of our Santa Claus traditions came from. But we're looking at Christmas through Mary's eyes one more time. And so, we're looking to see the wise men come. To see them as Mary saw them come. We're trying to see what Christmas meant for Mary, so that we can see in a new way what Christmas means for us. So let's see it new again today. So we go to the story of the wise men. The story of the shepherds and the angels is told in Luke chapter 2. The story of the wise men is told in Matthew chapter 2.
When Jesus was born in the village of Bethlehem in Judea, Herod was king. During this time, some wise men from the east came to Jerusalem and said, "Where is the child born to be king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him."
So the story opens with Jesus already has been born. Some translations say, after Jesus was born in the village of Bethlehem. This happens sometime after Christmas night. Herod was king in Jerusalem. And notice, it doesn't say how many wise men there were. It just says some. And some means more than two. So it could be three, perhaps. But it doesn't say there's three. And it doesn't even say they're kings, does it? It calls them wise men, or some others have magi, learned men, educated ones, people who studied the stars. They probably worked for a king somewhere in a royal court off some east land, but doesn't say that they themselves were kings. Now, last week we talked a bit about the story pictures that the carol writers make for us. Here's another one. We three kings of Orient are. And just as there's no donkey in Luke for Mary to ride on, notice there's no camels here for the Magi to ride on. Again, it's part of the carol pictures that have been created throughout the story. One more assumption here. The star, you see, if you notice look closely, it's not in the east. Now for us, Israel is towards the east. And so the Bethlehem star would be in the east of our sky. The wise men said it is while they were back east that they saw the star. So for them, Jerusalem was in the west, so for them it would actually be a western star. So our song should say Star of the West, really. Alright, anyway, they came looking for a king. And so, naturally they go to the capital, go to Jerusalem, to the palace, and find King Herod, and ask him about the new king born in Jerusalem, Judea. They were expecting to congratulate him. The problem is, however, that Herod hadn't fathered any babies recently. So there's a new king born, it came from somewhere else. And that, of course, caused him some considerable anxiety, considerable worry, as well as it did for all of those else with him who were around him and served him in Jerusalem.
When King Herod heard about this, he was worried, and so was everyone else in Jerusalem.
But Herod gets to thinking, I don't have any new babies. Perhaps this has to do with that promised one that the prophets had always talked about. We always hear stories about the promised coming every so often, so maybe it's one of those stories. Now, obviously it had to be just a rumor, for after all, no one in his court had heard about it. But maybe the prophecies could help provide a clue as to where the hoax was originated.
Herod brought together the chief priests and the teachers of the law of Moses and asked them, "Where will the Messiah be born?" They told him, "He will be born in Bethlehem, just as the prophet wrote, Bethlehem in the land of Judea. You are very important among the towns of Judea. From your town will come a leader who will be like a shepherd for my people Israel."
Micah 5:2 says Bethlehem. That's only 6 miles away. Small village. Makes this easier to handle. After all, this rumor had to be stopped, or else people try to follow this falsely proclaimed king, Messiah, rather than King Herod. That could lead to rebellion.
Herod secretly called in the wise men and asked them when they had first seen the star. He told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, let me know. I want to go and worship him too." The wise men listened to what the king said and then left. And the star they had seen in the east went on ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. They were thrilled and excited to see the star.
Herod wanted to know how old the baby was. So do we. How long is this after Christmas? Our question too. But it doesn't say. Grant. What it does say is that after he finds out how long ago the star had appeared, he then switches how he refers to the newborn king using the word child. The Greek word here is not the word for baby or infant. Luke uses the word infant over in the shepherd story. But here, the word they used here is a word for a kid who's older, maybe a toddler or something like that. So it seems that Jesus anyway is no longer an infant, a baby. Well, they go, and the star is again still over Bethlehem, or appears there again for them, guiding them to where Jesus was. And notice, they don't find him in a manger, and there are no shepherds around. He is now in a house.
When the men went into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother, they knelt down and worshipped him. They took out their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and gave them to him. Later they were warned in a dream not to return to Herod, and they went back home by another road.
Imagine this from Mary's perspective. Christmas came, Jesus was born, and people start going back to their homes after the census. They, however, it seems, decided to stay on in Bethlehem, probably because the law dictated that on the eighth day, the firstborn son had to be dedicated at the temple in Jerusalem. So they hung out down there close. Remember, they're only a two-hour walk from the temple in Bethlehem. So they kind of stay down there. Now, Joseph, it seems, has family in Bethlehem. That's where his family of origin, hometown, is. So Joseph may have tracked down that point after the first Christmas night, maybe, I don't know, brothers, sisters, cousins, someone, and moved in with them for a while. Again, it doesn't say what had happened, but I envision that the family they move in with insists that Mary and Joseph stay for a while, so the baby is older and safer for the trip back, the four-day journey back to Nazareth. Joseph is a carpenter, so perhaps he got a temporary job helping out some of the carpenters in Bethlehem for a while. It'd be easy for him to just show up at a shop and pick up the tools and get to work. So I don't know, they must settle in. Joseph's working, and time seems to go by. We don't know how long they're in Bethlehem, but most scholars guess anywhere from 9 months to 2 years. So you're in your cousin's house, kind of moved in. Someday you hope to go back to Nazareth. Jesus has started to walk. And one day, while Joseph is over in the shop, some strangers appear at the door. Not just ordinary strangers, foreigners. And they look different. They're dressed different. And they don't speak Hebrew or Aramaic. Perhaps they have an interpreter with them. They're not Jews. And that's a distinction very important to the Jews, for they had divided the entire world into Jews and non-Jews, or we call them Gentiles. The woman of the house invites them in. Now Mary is probably doing some housework, and in the room is Jesus, toddling along somewhere, perhaps playing with some wooden blocks that Joseph had made in the shop from scraps. She hears the noise. And her cousin, with a very perplexed look on her face, brings in some strange men into the room. Mary probably turns and sees them coming in, wipes her hands, goes over to Jesus. Jesus probably scoops him up and watches these strangers curiously. And these foreigners, probably more than three of them, huddle into the crowded room. Then she sees them kneel down and begin speaking muffled words. After a bit, Mary begins to realize that they're praying. This is some form of worship. They're kneeling down and they are worshiping her baby, or her infant, her child. She stands there, probably not saying anything, waiting to see what happens. Got weird. And the men put on the ground in front of her at her feet little boxes and jars and bags. Perhaps they're going to go to prayers again. And after a while, the interpreter finally speaks up, saying that they were gifts for the baby. Gifts of gold, frankincense. can only imagine how this is going. It doesn't say any of this in the story. But at some point, Mary's got to ask, who are you? Right? I mean, and I'm sure they begin to try to explain, probably through their interpreter. At this point, I'm sure Mary and her cousins probably invited them to a meal, as was the custom in ancient Palestine. Visitors get meals. So they probably invite them to stay for a meal. And so they probably have an extended time together around some food and some conversation. And as they're eating and talking and visiting together, these men tell the story of how they saw this star back home in the west. About their journey, about Jerusalem, about Herod, about coming to Bethlehem, starring. And all the while, Mary is trying to just take all this in. Just keeps getting more and more this Christmas story. They must have just stayed around a while, because it says that they were warned not to go back to Herod while they were asleep in a dream. They must have spent at least one night in Bethlehem, perhaps at that inn that had been too full when they first came to Jerusalem, to Bethlehem, at Christmas night. So what did Christmas mean for Mary then, with these strangers? Her world was just blown wide open. Yes, she had visits from angels. Wow. Yes, Joseph had dreams about this Jesus. Wow, Son of God. Yes, the shepherds came in telling their story about the angels. Wow, amazing story. Town had been abuzz about this baby. But these were all Jews, locals. The angel had told Joseph that Jesus would save God's people from their sins. God's people were the Jews, right? To Mary, the angel said that Jesus was the Son of the Most High God, the God of the Jews, right? And that the angel said that he would rule over the throne of David, the Jewish throne, forever. All this was for the Jews. But now, foreigners, Gentiles, had just come into her room and worshiped her baby. And they gave her baby, gave her child gifts that they were calling her child their king, their God, their Savior. As Mary was holding on to her squirming toddler, she would have looked at him and said to herself again, who are you? Somehow, he is also the Savior of the Gentile people too. They worshiped him. Some of the Jews were to worship him. Mary's world just got resized, expanded beyond her own family and situation, beyond even her own people and her own country. Somehow, her child affected people living far, far away. For Mary, Christmas meant that God cared about the whole world. It dawned on her that when the angel said that Jesus was going to save God's people from their sins, it meant that all of the people of the world were God's people. Christmas blew Mary's world. Christmas then means for us too that our world has to be as big as the world is. See, it's so easy for us to narrow down our world into only that which directly affects us, only our sphere of influence, only our own context. But don't gloss over John 3:16, which you probably try to memorize. For God so loved the world. You know, we often say, I was taught to grow up, say, put your name in there. For God so loved David. No! Leave it the way it says it. For God so loved the world that he sent his one and only Son. For whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. This blows our world wide open. When we ask Jesus to be born into our hearts, we ask the Savior of all peoples to be our Savior. When we commit to Jesus, he comes with family. I'm going to start next Sunday, I'm going to start pre-marriage counseling with Eric Blossom. Pretty exciting. One of the things we're going to talk through is that even though marriage unites the husband and the wife, it also unites the families that come with them. That's where it gets interesting. See, each spouse comes with family. And the marriage means you're not just getting your spouse, you're getting your spouse and your spouse's family too. It's all the more true when there's kids from previous relationships involved. Sometimes we want to take just Jesus. We want to love him and vow to be faithful to him, to live for him each day. We want Jesus to come into our world. But Jesus comes with family. To love Jesus means to love his family too. It's a package deal. It means we go into Jesus' world. When God first told Abraham from 2,000 years before Christmas, that one day God would send a Savior, God said that all the nations of the world would be blessed through that descendant. But the Jews had interpreted that Savior to be only for them, since they were God's chosen people. But God had chosen the Jews not because they were to be the sole inheritors of the Savior, but they were chosen to be the conveyors of that Savior the whole world. And then when Jesus dies on the cross, it's the foreigner, the stranger, actually the Roman centurion in charge of crucifying him, the one in charge there, who is the one who proclaims, surely this man was the Son of God. See, the Jews kind of got it wrong. Some of them did. And it's the Gentile there who gets it right. He is the one who acknowledges Christ's true identity. He is saying God's plan was way bigger. Christmas meant that their world was blown wide open. Christmas meant that Mary's world was blown wide open. Christmas means that our world needs worshiping this Jesus means that we have to include all of God's people as our people. Yes, it means that we take care and concern about the people of Africa dying from Ebola. Certainly. We need to do something about it. And it means that we need to care about people living the bondage of human trafficking in our own communities. We normally don't look at. We need to do something about it. We need to work to free those chains. But it also means, I think for us too, that we have to see those people in our normal day-to-day lives and care about the people that God brings into our lives, our past, and sometimes even into our homes that we normally don't see, don't include, don't have much time for. We try to keep nice barriers between us and most other people, preserving our private space, only having time for those relationships that really work for us, don't cause us undue stress. We don't want to be bothered for our own health reasons with other people who are not involved in our lives. We have enough to handle with what we've got. But Christmas means that these people, these strange people, these foreigners, these people we don't relate to very well, these are God's people too. And that we start to see them that way. Christmas means that our world needs to be as big as the world is. Tuesday's Epiphany. Let's make it an intentional celebration. Let's not overlook Epiphany this year. On Tuesday, at some point, in some way, however you're physically able, let's spend a moment and kneel down that on Tuesday. And kneel down and proclaim this Jesus to be our King, to be our God, to be our Savior. Let's worship like the wise men on Tuesday. Will you remember on Tuesday? Somewhere, however you can, kneel down in some way and proclaim Jesus as your the rest of you. Will you? All right. Then, also, sometime on Tuesday, make a special effort to reach out to at least one person who is not currently in your world. Do something to treat that person like family. Now, that I don't mean you go up to them and treat them, talk to them like you've known them all their lives. But do something for them that you would normally only bother to do for people who are in your family. Spend on them some effort, some attention, some money. Like you would if you were part, like if they were part of your direct family. Notice, see a need. Give a gift. Lend a hand. Spend some time. Make a visit. Start a conversation. Do it because, as family, they're worth it. Will you find someone on Tuesday to make your world bigger and include? Will you? In some way? Let's go home a different way. Let's live differently. Go a different way from now on. Not just because of the new year, because we have met Jesus. We have celebrated Christmas. And we celebrate Epiphany. And because our world has been changed, our world has been blown wide open. 11 Pipers have been. Let's share some.